Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania. And while I live in Bridgeport, which is nestled right in between King of Prussia and Norristown in lovely Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, my original home, as anyone who knows me knows, is Pittsburgh, PA. So I'm excited today to welcome former city councilwoman and someone I've known for a while, Natalia Rudiak, not from Pittsburgh today, but all the way from Spade, on the podcast. Natalia, thanks for joining.
Hola.
I distinctly remember when we met. It was like 2005. And this was before you had run, right? You ran, what, when?
2009.
So it was, I think it was like then because I was home living there and I went to a Young Dems meeting and I could sense your frustration then in terms of you just wanted to get stuff done. Is that a good attitude? Not ragging on anybody, but I remember that.
No, that's 100%. Your instinct was right on target there.
So but that shows you've been involved in politics in one way or another for a long time, even though you're a young person, right?
Well, I don't know how young I am anymore. I'm like, I consider myself a Zennial, so I'm in between Gen X and Millennials. It's hard to believe that baby Natalia, when you met me, I was probably about 25.
So was I. If I'm calling you young, I'm calling me young. So let's not pretend we're old now. Nothing against old people.
That's right. We're like 40 is the new 30 is the new 25, maybe. I was 25. I ran for office in 2009 when I was 29. And I was in office, let's see, until I was 38. And I've since taken a step back. I was on Pittsburgh City Council for 2 terms, which is a total of 8 years. But actually, I first won elected office in 2006. I was a committee woman for many years. Everybody's political structure is a little bit different, but in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, we have Democratic committees, and it's actually an elected position where, as a Democratic committee person, it's a volunteer position where you're basically supposed to be a good representative of the Democratic Party in your local neighborhood or ward or whatever. So. I was elected Democratic committee woman, so I've been elected, for 10 plus years.
So you're like a big deal then, right?
I'm a big deal in Pittsburgh.
Well, so Pittsburgh, but I remember Pittsburgh politics, again, not judging people, but it's more old school, and historically, I think, people kind of, it's the same people a lot of the time. So having fresh faces is often a challenge to the infrastructure of the Democratic Party in Allegheny County. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely fair assessment. Pittsburgh has pretty much been dominated by the same last names, frankly, for the past few decades. The party structure really seems to lift you up and embrace you when you've had a grandfather or uncle or brother or cousin who has also somehow been in the political structure, whether that's judge or state representative, et cetera, et cetera. So it can be really hard to break through as a person is not wealthy or with a famous last name. And that is particularly difficult if you're a young woman, because as we know, many women were not in elected office 30 or 40 years ago. So that kind of cultural, male machismo culture has really just been perpetuated through generation. So, you have to really fight to be taken seriously and frankly, win an election, garner support, et cetera, et cetera.
So what motivated you to do anything, to get involved in 2006? I mean, that's not the main reason I have you on here, but what made you decide I'm going to run for committee person?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Do you know the answer?
Sorry?
Do you know the answer?
I'm sitting here like, I think it was, everything you can think of, honestly. I mean, it ran the gamut from local issues to national issues to international issues. I was actually an international affairs major, which is really interesting that I became involved in local politics. So on the international, national level, it was around that time that the United States was fighting the Iraq war, and we had literally been spending billions of dollars a day in Iraq, and, you know, it was post 9/11. It was just a really, really challenging time for the country. And you may remember, I mean, weirdly, I feel like this has been swept into the annals of history, but, you know, the whole Kerry Bush election was like really challenging. The Iraq war was really polarizing. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, went to all the protests, but, you know, our country went forward anyway, which was just really, really frustrating because I think that was kind of the source of so much of the xenophobia and Islamophobia that you see today. And just really a waste of, like, you know, tax dollars and resources and lives. So there was that issue. But on the local issue, I had returned to graduate school at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh to study public policy and management. And I actually ended up moving back in with my parents to save money in our in the old neighborhood, which is the working class blue collar neighborhood of Carrick in South Pittsburgh. And I had really noticed a change between from when I was growing up to what it had looked like, you know, 10, 20 years later. It was, you know, there were many more abandoned storefronts. I feel like South Pittsburgh just wasn't getting the same attention or resources as other parts of the city. And, you know, we were losing, we were actually like hemorrhaging population. Everyone that I went to high, not everyone, I mean, a lot of people that I went to high school with were moving away or were either like really critical of the neighborhood. And, you know, all of these things, again, from the national to local level, just made me really, really want to get involved from a systemic level. You know, I think a lot of people get involved in charitable causes because they want to like help individuals, like provide individual services to meet individual need. But with issues as large as the Iraq war or like urban decline, you mean, I really, really, really wanted to figure out how to influence policy to change things on a systemic level. So we weren't just meeting, you know, internet or individual need, but we were actually changing society.
I mean, that's a pretty good answer. And the way to make a systemic change is to dive in and get involved. And then a few years later, you dove in and you got involved in running for city council. And, you know, again, city council, Pittsburgh, you know, Allegheny County, not always well run, I guess you could say. But it seems like things have improved a lot in Pittsburgh. I mean, I grew up there, so how it looks now looks a lot different than when we were both kids. So, you know, what was it like running for city council? Because I think we want to get more people thinking, I should challenge in my area and, you know, challenge the status quo and do something.
Yeah, so just for context, you know, I'm Natalia from the block, right? Like, I don't come from a wealthy family. I don't come from a family with a famous last name. You know, I just grew up in, like, this average blue-collar home. My mother is actually an immigrant from Poland. So my mom is Polish, and my dad was, like, Southside Polish. Grew up on the south side of Pittsburgh. And, you know, when he bought his house in the 70s, he was looking for his, like, postage stamp yard and, like, a middle-class life. So I went to public schools, went away for college. So yeah, I mean, I was like, I guess you could say a political outsider when I ran. I was 29. I ran before the whole women's wave, which I'm kind of jealous that all these women have all these friends and mentors and pals to lean on.
Well, you're the mentor now.
So I'm like, you know, I've been doing everything I can, like seriously everything I can to support this generation of women. And I'd like to think, you know, that myself and my sisters before me, you know, were part of the vanguard, but it was extraordinarily lonely and difficult. I mean, not to discourage anyone running from office, because I think, you know, in the end it was very validating and invigorating and impactful. So for people that don't know, Pittsburgh City Council is a full-time position. I mean, I would argue that it's like a double full-time position because you're always going to meetings and events and stuff. And so I had to raise, I would say at least $75,000 in my first raise, maybe more.
Wow.
I mean, I think over the course of my career, I've at least raised $250,000. I have it somewhere in my resume. I don't know how. This is sad. I should really know how much money I've raised a few hundred thousand dollars in my career. But, you know, I started a year beforehand. Years beforehand. I mean, I really started going to community meetings probably starting in 2005, 2006. I got on the board of my neighborhood council. I just knew that the bar for me as a young woman would be that much higher. Particularly someone without connections that, like, no one would just give me $20,000, right? And a lot of, folks in the machine or the good old boys, like, that's what happens. Like, you know, like, they'll be like, oh, you know, my brother's cousin, here's 20, you know, or, like, people, like when I first ran, the mayor of Pittsburgh at the time gave one of my opponents $20,000, just like that, in his bank account. And actually, the statistics show, and this is what's interesting, that women across the board, when they run for office, they actually have more individual grassroots donations and more low-dollar donations because they have to really pound the pavement to raise that money, which is great. But the issue is they actually spend more time fundraising and not as much time talking to voters. I'm sure we'll jump to this, but, you know, from my experience, that was true. And so that's actually why I started a PAC a couple years ago to help women run for office and help fund women's campaigns so they could spend more time talking to voters and less time fundraising. But I'm sure we'll get to that. In 2009, I mean, I probably spent a year preparing for my race, just calling everybody I knew. And I will tell you a funny story, and I would actually recommend doing this to everyone that's considering. Just put together a list of everyone you know. I mean, it could be your high school guidance counselor, it could be people from any of your jobs, it could be your family, friends. So I put together that list. I had a few hundred names, and I actually ended up cross-checking those names with people who had donated to presidential races, because all that federal information is like online and free. And I found that this one guy he was like my freshman year suite mate in college. I knew he was like doing well for himself because I saw him on like an episode of House Hunters as the real estate agent helping people find apartments in New York. And so that he had also donated pretty big money to a presidential campaign. So I called him out of the blue like 10 years after we went to college. And I was like, hey, I called him at work. And I was like, hey, remember me? Blah, blah, blah. I'm running for office. For these reasons, can I count on your support with a donation of $500? And that's when you're supposed to just take a break for 5 seconds and wait for the response. And he was like, sure. So that's how the magic started. And so after that, I raised a few thousand dollars, got together my campaign manager, rented the office, yada, yada, probably knocked on, a couple thousand doors at least. And I won the election against three other men who ran, and they did not expect me to win. I knew that I would win, but those guys did not expect me
to
win.
Did you know you would win because you felt confidence in yourself, or you were paying attention and you knew that you knew what was up because you had done the work and the data and everything?
I had an amazing team. I would also give this advice to your listeners. I mean, just get involved, like get involved in your neighborhood, get involved in the political ecosystem of your town or state or whatever. I mean, I think a lot of people just don't know where to start. I mean, just volunteer in a campaign or volunteer for a political group, go to meetings, go to events. I mean, I went to meetings and events and I did not know anybody, but I just got to know people. And through those connections, I actually found my political consultant. I went to a happy hour where I met my campaign manager. One thing led to another, and I had a great team, you know, that supported me, that was great. And I knew that I was just outworking everyone. I mean, I was out knocking doors like every single day. And I just knew that I was talking to the most people. People were ready for change. I also had the benefit that I was running on the heels of the Obama campaign. So thank you, Obama, because Obama had registered a ton of first-time voters and motivated a ton of infrequent voters.
And a lot of younger voters, too.
And a lot of younger voters. And so I can only hope that people that are considering running in the next couple years are buoyed by that energy, because I think a lot of these, you know, presidential campaigns are going to be putting, and advocacy campaigns are going to be putting a ton of money into registering new voters. So, you know, people running in the next couple years will have, in next few years, hopefully, I mean, this momentum sustains itself, but, you know, we'll really have the advantage of being able to capitalize on that. So my campaign actually, like, it's called a voter universe when you look at, like, who you, mm-hmm. you know, are, like, trying to get to vote. So our voter universe was pretty large. I mean, we focused a lot on first-time voters where the other campaigns didn't, and that really worked out. So I knew that I had the most endorsements than any of my opponents combined. In the end, I raised more money than any of my opponents. I knocked on more doors than any of my opponents. But I will say this, even though, you know, statistically, I was at the top of all of these, data points or whatever, I was still always listed last in every single media article. I was always an afterthought. It was extraordinarily frustrating. And I think that there was, frankly, you know, a lot of sexism and a lot of people writing me off on that. I mean, I remember when I first sat down with the journalist on this race, like, everybody was shocked that they were like, oh, but you look so young. And like, I remember wearing like business clothes at a meeting with the journalist, and she was like, oh, you're from Carrick? You don't dress like you're from Carrick, or like, do you really think that people in your district are going to vote for somebody with a master's degree?
So not only is it there's gender discrimination, there's age discrimination, and classism.
It's just my response was like, your neighbors want the same thing as my neighbors.
And like, it's not like she's discriminating, the reporter's discriminating against you, which obviously is part of that, but also discriminating against the people of Carrick, like, very much underestimating, you know, their open-mindedness.
Yes, 100%. And it's like, I also think it was a different time back then. Social media just wasn't as toxic, right? Like, I was the only candidate at the time to have a Twitter account. I was the only candidate at the time to really, you know, like, put my stuff out there on Facebook. And like, it's just changed so differently. And so I really do think that the civic discourse at the time was different and more hopeful. Again, thank you, Obama. I don't know, and I wish I had some better answers or insight on how to like navigate like campaigning and social media now, because it was different back then. I mean, of course, as I campaign in the future, you know, I had to like navigate that world. But I think there was like space to have those conversations, and you know, and that's a thing, right? Like, when you run for office, it's like, it's a job interview at every single door, in every single living room, on every single porch. And you really do get to like absorb and talk, and I don't know, and just hear everybody's hopes and dreams and fears of their neighborhood and for their future and for the world. And so it really can be a very inspiring process. Now, mind you, it's a difficult process, because they're like, you know, dealing, I mean, not to get too woo-woo or like Marianne Williamson or whatever, but like you're really dealing with like everybody's energy, right? And like sometimes that can be mean, sometimes that can be scary. Not scary, but like scary in terms of like someone getting in cancer treatment and like needing your help and like trying to figure out all of that, all of that. So like, I don't know. It's like you really do get to like get inside America. I mean, it sounds, yeah. So it was a really, really interesting experience.
Yeah, it reminds me of the podcast interview I did with James Cooper. He's a young black city council member from Oklahoma City.
Mm.
And I mean, probably kind of similar to Pittsburgh in a lot of ways, and including that there's a lot of work on the river. It seems like every city's got stuff on a river. But, you know, he is the same age that you were, basically, a public school teacher. And he changed the way he looks at door knocking. Instead of asking, what are your concerns, started asking, you know, what are your dreams and hopes for this area? And I think if we have more people like you and James and others kind of shifting how we talk, it could dramatically shift the overall politics. We don't have to be Marianne Williamson, but, you know, we can still be talking in a uplifting way as opposed to, you know, fighting all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. You know, and I always try to kind of bring that positivity and that kind of problem solving to my work and to my campaigning. And, you know, it did, you know, serve me well. And yeah, I don't know. I hope we can overturn these ties.
So those are the challenges. But being on city council is not an easy. Were you prepared for what you would encounter as a city councilwoman? Because, again, I'm on borough council in Bridgeport. We have a staff, like a borough staff of like 4 people. It's not, you know, I'm involved in things, and I can talk about someone like one person's garbage. I can figure something out there. But you have a lot bigger, wider thing. Was it a big challenge to jump into that, or did you just say, this is what I'm going to do?
Okay, so I'm trying to figure out how to say this. Okay, so just for context as well, like, before I got into politics, I worked for a couple of different, like, international NGOs, like, they're non-governmental organizations or nonprofits. I held a fellowship. I went to graduate school. I worked for Deloitte Consulting. I helped implement a financial management information technology system for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So I came in with skills. I came in from, you know, a very monitored kind of professional environment where the focus was on data, the focus was on performance, the focus on was using data to improve processes. You know, I was very involved in what's called business process mapping, where you look at, how to improve a process, like in a specific function of an organization, whether that's government or private sector, whatever. So like I came in like really, really armed with tools to get work done.
And if someone doesn't have the education you do, are there things like, if I was a city council member and wasn't as smart as you, well, I don't know that, like, do you know like how to tell someone, well, go do this and then you will come in prepared and armed to take on the world?
Yeah, so let me just tell you, I joke with people that the best, like, so I came up with all these skills, right? And, like, I'm glad that I had these skills, but it's not like I was able to come in and, like, completely overlay them on top of city government, right? Like, I actually recommend to people that if you want to get into politics, you should probably study psychology. Because that's really what matters, right? So I feel like if you can work with people, if you can talk with people, if you're like an organizer, if you understand how systems work, if you're okay with the checkbook, or I don't even think people use checkbooks anymore, like if you can look at your online banking account and figure things out, like you're good, right? Like that's what you need, because it's mostly about relationship building, It's about being able to navigate teams, being able to persuade and inspire and influence, because you can come in there like with a robot and have all the answers, but we don't have robot politicians. I mean, not yet anyway. You know, we might have robot cars, but we don't have robot politicians.
Not yet. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I know. Now, I mean, we'll see when the robots become our overlords. But yeah, I mean, coming in there, I do think it was very, very challenging as a young woman. I was the youngest woman elected in the city of Pittsburgh, the first woman to represent my district. And let's see, the political dynamics were such that I was kind of positioned to be like combative or like opposite the mayor. Like the mayor at the time did not support me. And I was pretty open-minded to working with the mayor and, you know, trying to get things done. But unfortunately, I think politics is seen as black and white. So if you're not with me, you're against me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was super frustrating. And I do think that women, and again, you know, I don't know if it's nature or nurture, and I'm not here to argue that, but from my experience, women do take a more collaborative approach to problem solving. So there were two other women that I was serving with. I hope there were two, like, I'm trying to think. Yeah, two other women that I was serving with. But I often say, like, I was the only non-grandma on council, because the other women I were working with were very much older than me and, you know, really kind of operated on a different level. Yeah, it was just much more, I don't know, it was all these skills and things that I talked about that were useful, like, I tried to put into place, but again, it was just so much more about relationship building and influence.
And as a woman, especially as a young woman, when you're on a city council, if people should look up what the city council of Pittsburgh looks like, because it doesn't look like your local town council with it's just one panel in a little room. Like, it's a significant thing, including in Philadelphia and other big cities. You know, like, you stand out. Your clothes stand out. Your hair stands out. Like, you stand out because you're different, and that's a good thing. So were you very much aware of that microscope that, you know, if you say something or act in a way or you're in a picture, people are going to notice you before they're going to notice Councilman Smith?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. And it's like super, 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 super frustrating to me that, like, really over the past couple years, you know, we've been starting to talk about quote unquote identity politics. And I think a lot of people on the right, like, are complaining about identity politics and about how women and people of color are, like, weaponizing their gender and their race to, I don't know, undermine society in America, blah, blah, blah. And basically, like, yeah, using our gender and race to, like, I don't know, demonize men or white people. And that's, like, totally not the case. I mean, the fact is that we have had identity politics since our country's founding, but that identity has been white and male, right? So when I would go to the mayor's conference room, there were literally like these ancient photos of every single mayor that the city has ever had. And I don't know, there's like dozens and dozens and dozens, like from like, you know, the early 1800s or whatever. And they all except one, all except Sophie Maslow, who was mayor in the 90s.
I remember
all
Sophie.
All of them are old white men.
Mm-hmm.
All of them. And so, you know, there may be people that are like, oh, well, you know, just ignore it. And like, you're strong. Like, why are you, you know, like that doesn't matter, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you know what? It does matter. Because when you're a woman who is in power, in that room, again, as you mentioned, like, we have this very, like, beautiful, like, Baroque, like, wooden panel room. It's just, like, so grand and so wonderful. I mean, it never would be built today. You know, as soon as you open your mouth, that that is the first time that citizens and the walls of that building have ever heard a young woman's voice in a capacity for power. And I think what you hear from a lot of young women, a lot of people of color, really, I mean, and really anyone, like any young people in office, is that they often feel like imposters. Like there's this imposter syndrome. So mm-hmm. if you go to the, you know, mayor's conference room and you see all these like old white men staring at you from like, you know, the couple hundred photos on the room, you're like, oh shit, like, do I really belong here? You know, like, is this really like, am I ever going to be accepted? And so you really have to kind of work twice as hard to make your voice heard. And it can be intimidating, right? I mean, there's a lot of bullying. There's a lot of kind of undermined, skeezy stuff that goes on. But I, you know, this is one of the reasons that I was always, always extremely enthusiastic when school groups came to city council or I was asked to speak in classrooms, because I really, really wanted to model and normalize for the next generation what power looked like and what power sounded like.
And that's why representation of different people matters, so that it can be normalized, so it doesn't look like a big deal anymore. And, you know, I really want to get someone from Nevada on the podcast, because it's the only state where women are the majority in the legislature.
Right.
And it seems like such a big deal, and it's such a big deal because it means the other 49 states don't have men in charge.
Right.
Which is fine for whomever, like, I'm sure I would rather have, you would rather have, a majority male, if it was voting in ways you cared about, than a majority female if they were all female, you know, terrible people. But if it's all men everywhere else, then that's an issue. It's then it's not male versus female. It's female versus the default.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I mean, I will say that, like, you know, we had a whip, like... I have to also address this, right? I think one criticism that you find of, like, urban centers is that, like, oh, well, you're all controlled by Democrats and you all think the same. And, like, places like Detroit and Philadelphia and Pittsburgh are, like, you know, really terrible because you're all controlled by Democrats, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, first of all, you know, like, not to get down this rabbit hole, but these states have, like, oftentimes are controlled by the right and Republicans. And so you do have, like, you know, who do create policy that influence, like, cities. So it's not just, like, a Democrat problem or, right, or a Republican problem. It's, like, a society problem. And I will say that despite the fact that we were all Democrats on council, I mean, we couldn't be – many of us could not be more different in our ideologies and beliefs. Right? Like, Democrats are not a monolith, just like Republicans are not a monolith. So the women on council, like, we formed this women's caucus, and it was really interesting, right? Because we all felt very differently about many issues, but we were all able to come together on a few issues, and one of those was early childhood education. And so, you know, I do think that, like, so, okay, so 77% of households in poverty in the city of Pittsburgh are single mothers with children. 77%.
Wow.
So
that sticks out really quickly.
Yeah.
But it only sticks out if you have a person that has an eye to let that stick out.
Right. So here's the thing, right? Like, I'm sure it's similar, and I'm sure in every single city and state and town and rural community across the country, right? Like, we know that women make less than men. We know that, like, at this point in society, like, so many women are single mothers, and you can argue why, you know, forever, but so many women are single mothers. We don't have paid family leave in this country. We don't have paid sick leave in this country. We don't have universal child care or early education in this country. So it just keeps women, like, trapped in this cycle of poverty. And so some may argue, right, well, you know what, if you address everyone's needs, like, if you address, like, if you just give everyone health care, like, you'll be okay. And, like, I would argue that you actually need, like, really, like, gendered or, like, female-driven, like, policy interventions to change that statistic. So, you know, like, we really do need to, like, if we're going to change the economy and change society, we really need to focus on like helping women make more money and completely not fall out of the workforce or be hindered from their jobs, you know, when they have a child. Because without us, right, obviously without us, like there is no society. So like we need to get paid, and, you know, we need respect, but like respect is just a word, but like we need equal status in society. And so I think that like when you're a man, no offense, like it just doesn't, like you just don't have those experiences. It's not that you're less of a person, or it's not like you're less intelligent. I mean, not that at all, right? It's just that like as a woman, you know, we live in this body every day, like you know, we're challenged every day. And so you really focus on things like sexual violence and, you know, pay equity, and childcare and all of these things. You just see them differently. And so you create policy around these things differently.
Yeah. I mean, I don't take offense. I know, like, I've worked with women on our council. We have a majority female council in Bridgeport now, and people will bring things up or suggest things, and I just wouldn't have thought about it. And it doesn't make one person good or bad. It's just having diverse perspectives means we get a better end product.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that goes, you know, the same, again, if you're like a person of color, if you are a first-generation American, or you've come here as an immigrant, you know, if you're African-American, we all come with these different perspectives. And like, if you only have one type of person in Congress, like if you only have rich people representing you, you're not really going to think about how the average person is like affected by the policies that you pass. So yeah, again, I mean, this isn't just like a women thing or like a black person thing or an immigrant thing. It's like a class thing too. I mean, how many like machinists or I don't know, like farmers do we have in Congress? Like probably not very many, right? Like we need diversity in all areas of politics. And I think that's like what's really frustrating about this like civic discourse that we have right now. Because it's like, again, it's kind of it's like, you know, this whole identity politics thing is like seen as bad when like really like, yeah, like you said, I mean, we just need all diverse perspectives involved so we can just be a stronger, better society and government that like just helps all people. I mean, Senator Paul Wellstone from Minnesota, again, I'm old, but he's really great for younger listeners who may not know who he is.
He was my original inspiration for politics too.
So. Paul Wellstone, guys, look him up. He had a quote, and it's very simple. It says, "We all do better when we all do better."
That's true, and that's why more people should run for office, right?
That's why more people should run for office. Because we need each other, you know, we met in Pittsburgh, but then, you know, we each ran for office and won our respective offices, you and I, and then we crossed paths again with the Young Elected Officials Network, which is a national network of young elected officials 35 and under, of which I have aged out.
Me too, because we're the same age.
Very, very involved, and it was just, I mean, if anybody's out there, looking even to get involved or run for office, they have a lot of programs to help you do that, like Frontline Leaders Academy, for example. But yeah, just look up People for the American Way and Young Elected Officials Network. So they had conferences every year where you could meet folks from really across the country, whether it's, you know, on school board in California or a state representative from Alaska, you know, anywhere, Florida, Texas, Detroit, wherever. It was amazing. So you really get inspired by everybody's stories and really take back policy ideas from all these different places. So, you know, that's why we do need to run for office, because again, our voices need to be heard, and unfortunately they're being left out in the conversation. And, you know, like we collectively can bring civility and reason and empathy and compassion back to the discourse, because it has been like so, I don't know, it's just become so nasty and toxic out there, and we have to change that.
Well, we can change by more people running. Really, really recommend the YEO network, and it's a really good place. Natalia, in the meantime, if you have other networks you'd like me to link to when I post this up, let me know. Okay. And before we go, you are calling from Spain. And I'm sure that you said quickly that things are a little bit less stressful there because everyone there has healthcare, right?
Yeah. So, really interesting, actually. When I was on council in 2015, I sponsored, and along with other members of council, and Corey O'Connor was a sponsor of that as well. He might be a good person to have on here. We passed paid sick days, which would mandate sick days for every worker in the city of Pittsburgh. And because right now, like, you could, whether it's a cold, cancer, or childbirth, like, you don't have sick days. There's no law that says you can take off for work and still get paid. So we passed a law with, like, pretty reasonable conditions. And we got sued by all these private restaurant associations. And so it finally went to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and it just got upheld, which is amazing. So now workers will have private health or have sick days. And it's so weird. Like, there were a couple state representatives that were like, oh, well, if Pittsburgh wants to be San Francisco, they should just go to San Francisco. And I'm like, dude, I don't really want to eat a hamburger with, like, snot or, like, boogers in it. Like, I mean, I had a friend who was a server at one of these restaurants that sued us. He said that she had pink eye and was forced to work with pink eye and, like, literally, like, was highly contagious, like, touching all these things, but, like, couldn't get off. It was just – so anyway, like, we are fighting the good fight here, like, for public health, for workers' rights, and, again, systemic, right? So you're really influencing this. So I would actually say that if you are, something I tell people is that whether you run or whether you want to support a candidate, right? Like, if you get $50 to, like, a breast cancer charity, that's $50. But if you get $50 to a candidate and put your politics where your values are, like, that candidate for federal office, for example, could carve out $50 million for breast cancer research. So, like, if you elect a progressive councilwoman, like, you could be guaranteeing, like, paid sick days and healthy work environments and happier babies and, stronger patients for tens of thousands of workers. So it's just really important.
Awesome. I really appreciate it. Thanks for inspiring other people to run and getting more women to run or young people to run and changing the class structure as well in Pittsburgh and beyond. So thanks. Have a good time in Europe.
Thanks. Sorry.
Yes.
I said I would pitch this.
Oh, do it.
I started an organization called Women for the Future. Check us out on Facebook. It helps women in Western Pennsylvania run for office. We help fund them and provide mentorship for them. So we're also known as WTF. Women for the Future. There we go. That's all. That's what I will leave you with.
send me the link, and we'll put it in with the link up when we post this on Facebook and everything else.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Thanks. Have a good time in Europe.
Thank you. Bye-bye.